The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Orders of the day, oral questions put by members to ministers. The time is now 1:07. We will finish at 2:07. The Honourable Member for Colchester North.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Education. The Nova Scotia Teachers Union President and Table Officers are here today to tell the Minister of Education that cuts to the classroom in our public schools are unacceptable. First, it was programs, reading recovery, youth pathways, literacy mentors, math mentors, but now, Mr. Speaker, it is teachers. The Nova Scotia Teachers Union made it very clear the back-to-balance strategy the government asked of school boards is decimating the system, and the future of our students is severely jeopardized. Teachers, Mr. Speaker, are the backbone of our school system. Boards predicted these cuts. They told the minister. She did not listen. So my question to the minister is this. Why did the minister ignore the voice of educators who know best how the system works and who understand the negative impact of her decision?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I would like to share in the acknowledgement that I do definitely agree with member opposite that the teachers are the backbone of our system. And I also would like to now share, though, that I have to say that even though they are the backbone of the system, we need to have the children there for them to teach. And we are in a situation of declining enrollment, and we need to make sure that our numbers are appropriate to meet the needs of our students. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member, Colchester North, on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Halifax Regional School Board has announced that it will cut 44 probationary teachers. These teachers are just entering the school system. They are bright, young teachers who are now learning that they are a target as a result of the minister's cuts. On December 7, 2010, I expressed concerns that young teachers will not be able to find work in Nova Scotia, but the Premier assured me and others that that is not going to happen. Well, Mr. Speaker, it is happening. So my question to the Minister is this. How are these bright, young, talented graduates to be comforted when they are facing layoff notices from their board?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And we have bright young teachers in our system, and we are now in the process of going through staffing at the school boards, and with the attrition and retirements that will be coming along as the months roll along, I am very much looking forward to having our bright young teachers being reestablished back in our system. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Colchester North on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I think that is an admission by the Minister that they are gone and she's looking to reinstate them. Well, Mr. Speaker, it's quite clear Halifax Regional School Board is eliminating 44 probationary teachers, and this is in addition to attrition. In fact, across the province, the number of teaching positions is being cut by 230, and that number is growing. Each year, our universities graduate over 600 new teachers, many who want to stay in Nova Scotia, and we want them to stay. So my question to the minister is this. What does she have to say to the young graduates who will not be able to find work in Nova Scotia because of her decision?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And unfortunately, we have a situation of declining enrollment in Nova Scotia. And over the next 3 years, Mr. Speaker,
Order, order, please. The Honourable Minister has the floor.
We know that over the next 3 years, we're going to lose 7,000 more students. And unfortunately, when we lose students, we do not need to be hiring the same amount of teachers. It will take time for attrition and retirement and to balance out the system. But, you know, we have a place in our system for our bright and our youngest teachers. And so, therefore, I'm looking forward to seeing them coming back into our system. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is to the Premier. The Premier likes to point out, Mr. Speaker, that school funding has gone up over the past 10 years while enrollment has gone down. But he ignores the fact that the Hogg formula deals with that automatically. He ignores the fact that our schools are in a much better place today than they were 10 years ago, that we have programs today like options and opportunities, like math mentors and literacy mentors, and yes, like reading recovery. And we have teachers who have the tools they need to do the job that they do for our students. Mr. Speaker, he also ignores the fact that we were starting from a very low base 10 years ago, when Nova Scotia had the lowest education funding per student in all of Canada. In fact, he only needed to ask his own health minister, who said in 2001, and I quote from Hanser, "This province provides less money per student than any Canadian province except one in any American state." And so, Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier is this. Of all the places he could have gone to balance the budget, why is he saving his sharpest knife for our school system?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, again, that's not the case. In fact, per student funding in this province will go up this year. It will go up quite significantly. The reality is that the overall public education budget will increase this year, Mr. Speaker. We understand the value of education, but we also understand that as enrollment declines, it will be necessary to ensure that the system is actually meeting the demand.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, only this government could say they're putting more money into education while teachers are being laid off and while real programs in the classroom are being cut. Perhaps he should have listened to his own Minister of Transportation, who said in 2006, and I quote, "Parents expect a strong, properly funded education system. They also expect the next Premier of Nova Scotia to commit to nothing less." That is the words of the Transportation Minister. And so my question to the Premier is this. Now that he is the Premier, why is he changing his tune, ignoring the advice of his own Minister of Transportation, and indeed committing to much less, not more, for our schools?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, they were wise words when the Minister of Transportation said them. They remain wise words today, Mr. Speaker, and he knows that he has a Premier that's committed to exactly that. More per student funding, Mr. Speaker, more overall funding in education. Mr. Speaker, we are delivering a good quality education to the people of Nova Scotia.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the Premier may hope that he still has the support of his Minister of Education. He may be the only one left at the route that the way they're going with our school board cuts. And so my question to the Premier is this, as a final supplementary. Everyone knows that the key to our future prosperity, to allowing our children to soar as high as they can go in our province, is through our education system. That is what we entrust our teachers with. And so my question to the Premier, why is he spending $200 million on his bloated bureaucratic economic development strategy, but then cutting the education budget, which is the true and best form of economic development in our province?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, perhaps the member opposite is confused. I just said on two occasions that, in fact, the per pupil funding in this province is going up. The overall education budget is larger than it was in the past, Mr. Speaker, and the reality is that we have a significant decline in this province in the number of pupils in our schools. It does mean that the system has to respond to the demand that is there. I think that's a perfectly understandable position. I think most people in Nova Scotia understand that we are in fact providing students in this province with a very high quality education.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Premier has said no to freezing the DSM charge on power bills. He has said no to having a performance audit of Nova Scotia Power's operations. He has said no to ensuring government officials at the rate hearing oppose any rate increases. Mr. Speaker, the only people the Premier hasn't said no to is Nova Scotia Power. So my question to the Premier is, when is he going to start saying no to Nova Scotia Power and standing up for Nova Scotian ratepayers?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, as usual, I'll have to start off by correcting the member opposite. I didn't say no to any of those things, Mr. Speaker. In fact, what I've said is that we are going to be there to intervene, to ask the questions, to make sure that the rate case that is being made by Nova Scotia Power is in fact an appropriate one in order to protect the interests of the people of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, it is the people of Nova Scotia that this government stands up for.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Well, then the first thing you should do, Mr. Speaker, is order a performance audit of Nova Scotia Power before they go back into the pockets of Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, this is a quote from our Premier on May 28, 2008, and I quote, "Power bill increases will make life less affordable for every family in this province, and these increases will affect jobs as Nova Scotian industries struggle to remain competitive," end of quote. My question to the Premier, what has changed to make NDP support higher power rates?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, there's a lot of ridiculous things said in this chamber, but that's got to be right at the top. Mr. Speaker, we do not support higher power rates. Quite the opposite, Mr. Speaker. It is why this government took the HST off of energy in order to make people's lives more affordable, Mr. Speaker. That's why. It is why we brought in the Renewable Electricity Plan, Mr. Speaker, so that we can make sure that the province gets away from the international fossil fuel market, so that we can have stable, predictable, long-term rates, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, speaking of being ridiculous, listen to the Premier. He talks about removing the HST off home electricity, Mr. Speaker. This is this government that added the DSM charge, Mr. Speaker. Some people refer to it as the NDP electricity tax, Mr. Speaker. It is this government that has increased the HST on every other thing that Nova Scotians do by 2%. It is this government that has increased 1,400 user fees, Mr. Speaker. And I might add, Mr. Speaker, they increased them outside of the legislature, not in this place where we could debate the merits of the increases, Mr. Speaker. My question to the Premier, why does the NDP government remain silent as power rates are going up and making life less affordable for Nova Scotians?
Honourable the Premier.
Again, Mr. Speaker, virtually none of that is true. The reality is, it is this government that has been bringing in things like taking the HST not only off of home energy, but children's clothing, shoes, a variety of other items as well, Mr. Speaker. The reality that this government is the one that is responding to the needs of the people of Nova Scotia. That's why we have the Renewable Electricity Plan to ensure that we soften electricity rates by smoothing them out over a long period of time, Mr. Speaker. And unfortunately, it was the opposition parties that voted in favour of higher electricity rates for Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Gas is already at $1.37 a litre in Halifax, $1.38-$1.39 in other parts of our province, Mr. Speaker. And today, Nova Scotians are bracing themselves for another hike at the pumps. So my question for the Premier, what relief does the Premier is going to give Nova Scotians from the high gas prices?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, As you know, gasoline prices are dictated by the international markets. That's not something that's within the control of this province or that matter for any province. The simple fact of the matter is that we understand that these things are very difficult for people. That's why we brought in things like the affordability tax credit in order to help those people who are having the most trouble making ends meet, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the tax that is charged on a litre of gasoline is under the control of this government, Mr. Speaker. Every time that the price of gas goes up 1 cent a litre, Mr. Speaker, the government takes an additional $1.5 million, Mr. Speaker. We charge tax on a tax in this province. The Premier called the practicing of putting a tax on a tax one time an immoral tax, Mr. Speaker. Now that he's in a position to do something about this, he is remaining silent and will not fix it. So my question to the Premier, when will the Premier put an end to what even he calls this immoral tax?
Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the member opposite might have noticed Mr. Speaker, that we already took the HST off of a number of things, and we would, quite frankly, love to be able to do more. Unfortunately, Mr. Speaker, we were left with a debt that was continuing to grow. Unfortunately, it will be a very large deficit this year, Mr. Speaker, so we're not in a position to do that now, but it, you can be assured that it is among the things that we would like to be able to do.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
The only person in the province who gets excited when the price of gas goes up is the Minister of Finance. That's because he knows that he's been able to deeper into the pockets of Nova Scotia. Fixing the tax on tax, Mr. Speaker, will give Nova Scotians a bit of relief. Matter of fact, it will give them 3.8 cents a litre if I stop charging the tax on tax, Mr. Speaker. More importantly, Mr. Speaker, it's just simply the right thing to do. My question to the Premier, why is the Premier against making life more affordable for Nova Scotians by not removing the tax on tax?
Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, we're doing everything we can in order to meet the needs that we see and find in our society today. That's why we brought in the disability tax credit, the affordability tax credit. That's why we took the HST off of home energy. It's why we took the HST off of things like diapers and children's clothing and those kinds of items, Mr. Speaker. It's why we made the single largest investment in a decade in our most vulnerable Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. There is a range of things that this government has done in order to try and meet what is a very real need. We would love to be able to do more, and when we have the financial resources to do so, we will do so.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Today, we have 22 members of the Nova Scotia Teachers Union observing in the gallery. We have 22 people who represent hundreds more who are worried about their jobs and about the negative effects that this government's actions have had on classrooms across the province. This week, 44 teachers in HRM and 14 teachers in Cape Breton got layoff notices. The minister says this is business as usual, part of a typical budgeting process. But 22 people in the gallery say she is wrong. This is not business as usual. They say the last time that the budget process resulted in teacher layoffs was well over a decade ago. My question, will the minister admit today that the budget cuts imposed by her government will result in fewer teachers in the system and will have serious negative effects on our children?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much. I would like to assure the member opposite that the child in the classroom's education and their experience in school is protected. That is what the school boards are now doing. They're in the process of making sure that we're balancing our system appropriately. Unfortunately, we've lost a lot of our children out of our system, and we're making sure that that their programs and they are the education that they receive in the classroom is protected. We have, the ratio is now the lowest we have, teacher-student ratio in a generation. 1 to 15. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, this government seems determined to create chaos in the school system, threatening double-digit cuts, getting rid of reading recovery, and now minimizing the impact of the loss of valuable teachers that they will that'll have on students. My question, the NSTU estimates over 230 teachers will be removed from the system in the coming year. Is the loss of that number of teachers business as usual for the minister, or will she act now to minimize job loss and maximize the educational opportunities for our students?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. The school boards are doing their due diligence around making sure that the appropriate number of our teachers are going to be in our system to meet the needs of the children that are in our system. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Argyle on your final supplementary.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And the last supplementary is a very simple one. Will the minister guarantee that class sizes will not increase significantly as a result of NDP education budget cuts?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I know that our school boards are going to be making sure that the appropriate number of students are in the classes. We do have caps on our younger grades, and we've given them the ability to increase them no more than two. So, Mr. Speaker, I just would like to assure everyone here that the school boards are staffing appropriately to the numbers and the needs of our students. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Halifax-Clayton Park.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Health and Wellness. As the Minister is aware, Capital Health nurses, represented by the NSGEU, voted 94% in favour of strike action. While conciliation begins today and is scheduled to go until next Tuesday, it's clear by the decisive vote, nurses are not happy with the NDP government's initial offer. Equally concerned, Mr. Speaker, are the patients utilizing health care services in our province's largest district health authority. My question to the Minister of Health and Wellness is, has the minister spoken directly to the Capital District Health Authority about contingency plans in the event of a strike?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, through you to the member, nurses at the Capital District Health Authority, indeed, throughout all of our district health authorities, are a vital component. They're the backbone of our healthcare system. And they are here in the Capital District in collective bargaining, as the member has said, Mr. Speaker. And certainly, I'm very hopeful that negotiations will proceed to an amicable settlement.
The Honourable Member for Halifax-Clayton Park on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I think we're all hopeful that that will work out. But the question is, should conciliation fail, the countdown begins. And planning needs to be happening now, not later. This minister can lay the responsibility on the doorstep of Capital Health, but at the end of the day, it is the Minister of Health who is ultimately responsible for the well-being of patients. My question to the minister is, will the minister please indicate whether she is satisfied that contingency plans at Capital Health will protect patients in the event of a strike?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, we work very closely in the Department of Health with our district health authorities through the collective bargaining process to ensure that we're well prepared in the event that there is any labor disruption. But Mr. Speaker, as I said, the parties are in bargaining, and we're encouraging the parties to reach an amicable settlement at the bargaining table.
The Honourable Member for Halifax-Clayton Park on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, there are two parties negotiating, as far as I can tell, and they are far apart in their demands. Nurses working in mental health, public health, critical care, transplants, corrections, occupational health, nurse educators, and rehabilitation have said to government, "We don't like your offer." Patients who rely on the invaluable services provided by nurses in those areas are wondering who will provide care in the event of a strike. My question to the minister is, will the minister table in this House, before the end of business today, a copy of the contingency plan should these nurses actually strike?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, I'll just reiterate what I said earlier, that district health authorities, including Capital Health, during labour negotiations are prepared to look at the services that they need to provide and maintain in the event of a labor disruption. Labor unions, as part of their collective agreements, have provisions that will provide for essential services. And as this process unfolds, Mr. Speaker, we will be encouraging the parties to reach an amicable solution at the bargaining table, so we won't have to go to the extent of having a contingency plans arranged.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Mr. Speaker, this morning in the Chronicle Herald, we learned of a man who had been injured in the woods while using a chainsaw. A local councillor said the Magers Grant Elderbank Fire Department that serves the area has seen its rank of volunteer members plummet from 40 in 1996 to just 3 members. Mr. Speaker, volunteer firefighters are critical to the safety of our communities, but they need support from all levels of government. In this case, more than one call was made to 911, but it took more than an hour before the man was reached. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister. What is this government's plan to recruit and retain volunteer firefighters so there are volunteers available to respond to such horrible accidents?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The government certainly takes that situation very seriously. The health and safety of our residents is something that's very important to all of us in this chamber. And as we have discussed previously, volunteer fire departments are facing many of the challenges that are facing the voluntary sector organizations throughout Nova Scotia and, quite frankly, across Canada. And so we have been working very closely with volunteer fire departments in terms of developing a training and retention plan. We've invested considerable money into infrastructure, and we will continue to discuss with them the day-to-day needs they have when a lot of their volunteers are elsewhere, not working in the community that they serve in the volunteer fire department. So thank you very much, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Victoria the Lakes, on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the councillor also said the Halifax Regional Municipality Fire Department is putting too many demands on the volunteers, and people won't do it anymore. Mr. Speaker, the dangerously inadequate enrollment at one volunteer fire station almost cost a man his life. So, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the Minister, will the Minister table the report today that she received more than a year ago from the Fire Service Association of Nova Scotia on their recommendations for recruitment and retention?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've certainly referred to the report because I know that there are ongoing discussions happening between various government departments and voluntary fire services. I don't know the status of the report. It's something I can certainly check into because, you know, we've been taking the recommendations very seriously and having ongoing discussions. So that's something I can check with my officials about and get back to the member in short time. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Victoria Lakes on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Minister for that. Mr. Speaker, towns across Nova Scotia have a significant turnover in volunteer firefighters, especially in rural areas. So, Mr. Speaker, this is an issue that we can't keep ignoring. My final question through you to the Minister, what incentives is this government providing to existing firefighters and potential firefighters to ensure our rural communities stay safe?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Certainly we do have tax incentives for fire service volunteers and fire halls, but as we all realize in this chamber, it's not those incentives that encourage and retain people in volunteer fire departments. But unfortunately, like many community organizations, the volunteer fire services are facing the reality of changing demographics in Nova Scotia. And so we take this very seriously. We're working closely with them, and we'll certainly do our best to make sure that we have the high
highest standard of protection of our citizens across the province. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, there are many important issues in the Department of Labour and Advanced Education. Volunteer recruitment of firefighters, or recruitment of rather volunteer firefighters, as we just heard, occupational health and safety, tuition hikes of 3, 6, 10, 14%, cuts to a disability specialist position at Dalhousie University, residence fee hikes, student services fee hikes, MOU negotiation, the list goes on. So my question is for the Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. Why is government preventing questions to the Minister's department during budget estimates?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I look forward to an opportunity to talk about the many challenges and assets that we're moving on in terms of the Department of Labour and Advanced Education. We're doing some wonderful work, and I always appreciate an opportunity either during question periods or during estimates or in committees to celebrate the many successes we've had in moving forward on many of those issues. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, since this government is preventing me from asking questions on advanced education and labour during estimates, I'd like to ask the Minister about university tuition increases. On April 19th, the Minister said a letter went out to universities outlining how they must justify any tuition increases. What rationale are universities expected to provide to the department before they announce any increases?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education. That's...
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not sure if the question was around tuition increases or fee increases, but perhaps I can just briefly mention both. We've capped tuition increases to 3%, except for the professions of medicine, law, and dentistry. With international students, there is a 3% cap unless the university feels that it has able to justify an increase in the cost of delivering that service, and they're able to make that present that rationale to the department. In terms of fees, there's a certain protocol that they're required to use as governed by the previous memorandum of understanding, and that the fee increases are something that are part of the upcoming MOU negotiations for further years. So we feel that we've put sufficient protection in place for students for the coming year, and we will sit down and negotiate increases into the future with the universities themselves. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, because the Minister is not sure of what was said on April 19th, she said, a letter just went out, it may actually have been early this week or late last week, from the Deputy Minister clarifying the notice and the rationale that universities are expected to provide to the department before they announce any increases. My previous question had dealt with tuition increases. So my question to the Minister, can the Minister please tell this House whether the universities have provided this rationale and whether it complies with the department's letter?
The Honourable Minister of Labour and Advanced Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I had earlier, I believe last week, tabled the direct letter from me to the university presidents, and I will now table the second letter, the one from the deputy, just reminding them of the protocols and the procedures in place around fees and tuitions. And certainly, none of the increases that require approval or prior notice to the department have officially gone through without that notice or prior approval. We are still waiting. There's been a lot of speculation about increases that have not materialized, but I have to say that nothing has happened formally that shouldn't have happened. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Inverness.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, this side of the legislature...
Order, order, please, order. Order. The Honourable Member for Inverness has the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This side of the legislature has a role to play for Nova Scotians, to question government with the aim to make things better. In estimates, the Minister of Finance said to me, he said, you raise good questions, but I can't answer them here. Last week, when our leader here asked the Premier questions in question period, same questions, the Premier said these questions are better asked in estimates. So they agree they're good questions, they just don't want to answer them. What's wrong, Mr. Speaker, with giving Nova Scotians transparency about the cost of the user fees they pay, about telling Nova Scotians the actual number of people who work in government today, and the need to prepare now for changes, possible changes to the 2014 federal transfer arrangements?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
I don't know what was the question?
Mr. Speaker, it's hard, I think, to understand where the question is going. We're nearing the end of a process of 40 hours of budget debate in this chamber, 40 hours in the other chamber. It so happened when the member for Inverness was asking me questions, he was all over the place asking me questions that had little to do with the estimates of finance, Mr. Speaker. And all I did, Mr. Speaker, was ask the member to ask questions that were within the scope of the estimates that I was actually there to defend. I don't think that's unreasonable. And he, like any member of the House, Mr. Speaker, like any member of this caucus as well, is free to ask any question that they choose, whether in question period or that's what this House is for, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Inverness on your first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I can tell you one vision that this minister struggles with, and that's building a competitive tax environment in Nova Scotia. So, Mr. Speaker, it is not just this opposition on this side of the House that faces the indifference of this government. 63 mayors, wardens, and councillors were here 2 weeks ago because they said it did matter to them when this NDP government broke their agreement for cost-sharing of services. Now, Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Premier. Now that he's made the announcement for them in Amherst last week, impacting their budgets once again, will the Premier share with the municipalities the business plan to spend $100 million to convert streetlights to LED so they can prepare, so the municipalities can prepare for the impact that it's going to have on their budgets?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I appreciate the question because I appreciate the opportunity to give the answer. The reality is that the Union of Nova Scotia Municipalities came to the government of Nova Scotia. They made a presentation to the government asking to move over to LED lights because they said this would have a significant positive impact on their bottom line. Had the member been at the announcement that was made in Amherst, the mayor of Amherst said he expected this to save his small municipality about $85,000 and maybe as much as $2 million over the life of the change.
I would just like to remind all members that the questions in the supplementary are supposed to be somewhat to the same subject matter in the first supplementary and second supplementary. So I'll recognize the Honourable Member for Inverness. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the theme today is indifference. That's what the connection is to it all. And Mr. Speaker, it's interesting because the Premier gives one answer, but there are 63 mayors and wardens and councillors around this province that feel differently about the MOU. And I know when I spoke with them about the LED issue last week, they said, yes, it is something we wanted. But why did the Premier go off and make the announcement without even telling us he was going to do it and without even telling us about the business plan behind it? Because it is going to impact their budgets. I also want to point out, Mr. Speaker, on this theme of indifference, this government's indifference to Nova Scotians. Because they had told people they wouldn't raise taxes, and yet they promised they wouldn't raise the HST, and they did that too. My final question is to the Minister of the Public Service Commission.
Listen up, Frank.
And Mr. Speaker, no targets have been provided to Service Nova Scotia or our largest department, the Department of Health, because I've asked both ministers in estimates and here in question period about the number of FTEs in their department for the coming year. There's been no targets for this government's promise to reduce the number of FTEs by 1,000.
This government's actions show its indifference,
please,
Mr. Speaker,
question.
To their promise to live within their means. So my question is, will this government hold true on its commitment to make government smaller and more affordable, or will this promise be broken too?
The Honourable Minister of the Public Service Commission.
Yeah, Mr. Speaker, unlike the previous speaker and his previous administration, we're not going to be cutting nurses and as the previous government before them, firing nurses and getting them ready. Mr. Speaker, the member already had his question. I will try to have my answer. My answer is quite simple, Mr. Speaker. We will reduce by 10%. Like we said, we don't break promises. We deliver promises. We make this we'll make this province great, Mr. Speaker. This will be a great, great, great province, and we'll know it, and we'll know it particularly after May 2nd, Mr. Speaker. We'll see who's crowing over there.
The Honourable Member for Kings West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Justice. 15 months ago, the Minister of Justice was made aware of the latest death in the Valley via a letter sent to him from the Kentville Chief of Police, Chief Mark Mander. As indicated in the letter, this was just one of many. Chief Mander has indicated to me that there have been as many as 22 drug-related deaths investigated by the Kentville Police Department since 2005, number which can be confirmed by the medical examiner. My question to the Minister, why wouldn't the Minister of Justice pick up the phone, put pen to paper, make any contact at all with Chief Mander on this issue when it was brought to his attention 16 months ago?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I really appreciate the question. It's just another example of the opposition's inability to get the facts and understand what's really going on. Mr. Speaker, I am pleased to say that our department, immediately upon receiving that letter, had responded and communicated with the Department of Health, and correspondence went out within 2 weeks of that. In addition, my department has been in contact with Mr. Mander on many occasions since then. We take this matter seriously. The health of each and every Nova Scotian is important. The safety of each Nova Scotian is important to us. And as recently as yesterday, my department was speaking with Mr. Mander on that very issue. On an issue of speaking to him in regards to that, I had the pleasure of sitting next to Mr. Mander on numerous occasions. At no time was that raised as a serious matter beyond the action that we were already taking. And he was comfortable with the communications that was going on. So I'd appreciate if the member on the other side would get his facts straight.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Minister can talk about the facts that this government is taking this issue very seriously. Unfortunately, they failed to take action when it counted 16 months ago. Mr. Speaker, Chief Mander highlighted the fact that their intelligence showed that the prescribed opiate painkillers were not imported, but are being obtained locally by people selling pills from prescriptions. This past Monday, following a police raid, two individuals were arrested for possession of prescription medications, the second in 3 days, and most notably methadone, which is supposed to be a highly regulated substance. My question to the Minister of Health and Wellness, could the Minister tell this House how is it possible that quantities of highly regulated methadone, which is supposed to be administered by trained healthcare professionals, makes its way onto the street for potential sale?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Member raises a question that is important to this government. We have 4 methadone treatment clinics around the province. Methadone is a substance that needs to be monitored very carefully and very closely, as well as the other opiates and narcotics that are legally prescribed. And that's why we have the provincial drug monitoring program. Mr. Speaker, that monitoring program is a leader in the country in terms of the work that it does. We work very closely with them, And I met with them 2 days ago, in fact, and we continue to look at the ways that we can strengthen the work that they do. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Kings West on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, Dr. Gould's preliminary report is expected on May the 9th. Several families are calling for a treatment program today. This report should have been done when action was requested by Chief Mander 16 months ago. Things have deteriorated since that time, and urgent action is needed now. My question to the Minister of Health and Wellness, in the meantime, will the Minister support individuals seeking long-term treatment now who are not able to access it in Middleton with a placement at Crosby House or other treatment centres until a concrete plan is implemented?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I'm pleased to report to the members of this House that addiction services in the Annapolis Valley, in fact, in all of our district health authorities, are meeting or exceeding the provincial wait time standards for withdrawal management and detox. And as well in other programs, 9 out of 10 clients are seen within 21 days, Mr. Speaker. And we do move patients from one district to another, Mr. Speaker, if there is a need to have someone enter a program immediately and there isn't a bed in their area. But what additional services might be required is a question that I will contemplate when I get the report from Dr. Gould, expected by the 9th of May.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, before I begin, I would like to make clear I would have preferred to ask these questions during budget estimates. However, we were denied the opportunity when the government skipped over justice in the Red Room. According to Statistics Canada, Nova Scotia has the highest rates of sexual assault in the country. Could the Minister of Justice please outline what steps he's taken to reduce those rates?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you. Thank the member for the question. Assaults of any type are unacceptable in our society. I have the utmost confidence that our police, in each and every case when it's reported, gets investigated. One of the difficulties with these types of offences is the non-reporting. So, and it's bringing the issue forward. There's also the issue of people that become victims, and I think as a government and as a Justice Department and as the Justice Minister, we're looking at how do we focus more on the needs of the victim, and we don't want to re-victimize people within the system. So it is a sensitive issue. It is an issue that I take seriously, and it is, and that type of harm or crime in society really casts a strong sign of injustice in the society. So we have to work in a collaborative manner with all stakeholders to address that. And I am committed 100% to the safety of each and every Nova Scotian, and any crime of that nature is unacceptable.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I didn't hear any concrete steps there. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia has the lowest charge rate in sexual assault cases. Can the Minister of Justice please identify what steps he and his government have taken to increase those charge rates?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you for that question. As a Justice Department, crime prevention is probably the most important step that we can take. We're increasing in those areas. On the issue, specifically in dealing with charges, once again, I encourage people to come forward with their complaints. I think one of the barriers in that is how the victim feels. And in that regard is that we have to find processes and ways. And that's why, for example, we set up our courts, the domestic violence court in Cape Breton. We're looking at the mental health courts, because it's not just a straight crime that's being committed there. There's many different forms of how that crime gets committed and in what conditions. And so we have to look at the totality of the system. But I want to stress without question that this minister, that this government and the Justice Department is committed to looking at the safety and the well-being of each Nova Scotian.
The Honourable Member for Bedford-Birchcote on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I commend the government for setting up the domestic violence court. However, not all cases of sexual assault involve domestic violence. Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotia has the lowest rate of conviction in sexual assault cases in the country. Can the Minister of Justice please outline what steps he's taken to make sure those who are guilty of sexual assault are actually convicted?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Well, I think the word justice is what the key word is here. I have the utmost respect for the quality and of our judicial appointees and people that sit on the bench. I have the utmost respect for our prosecutors and for our police officers. And it is also that I believe that from a Justice Department, we're in constant contact with all stakeholders and looking at ways to ensure that our processes and delivery of justice system is the best possible system that we can provide. And I have the confidence in the system. There are gaps, and we are working very diligently to address any gaps within our system.
The Honourable Member for Hants West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Minister of Health and Wellness. During the recent estimates debate on the health budget, the Minister explained that additional funding was being put forward for kidney dialysis treatment in the Capital District Health Authority. I asked the Minister about the potential for a satellite dialysis station at the Hants Community Hospital in Windsor. The Minister's explanation from the draft Hansard is that it was something that could be looked at. My question today is, why was the Minister not more forthcoming as to the real plans for this additional funding?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And Mr. Speaker, as the Honourable Member would know, we're in the process of reviewing the business plans that have been submitted from the district health authorities. And in addition, we look at the work that's been done in the department with respect to satellite clinics and where they are mostly needed around the province. We have identified certainly gaps in service delivery in parts of Nova Scotia, and we will be making our decisions about where are the priority areas to invest the resources, the new resources that are in this year's health budget for expanded kidney dialysis services when we've reached our conclusions of the DHA reviews. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Minister was clearly not forthcoming with the hard facts because later that afternoon, officials at the Capital District Health Authority were contacted and that they explained that the funding was being used to hire additional nurses only, approximately 20 more to work in the kidney dialysis unit in Halifax and Dartmouth. Besides Halifax and Dartmouth, the Capital District Health Authority does stretch to the Guysborough County line, just past Sheet Harbour, and to the Kings County line as you would head toward the valley, which includes the Hants Community Hospital. When you consider the terrible winter storms and weather which people must drive through at the cost of gas now going up, for example, Mr. Speaker, my question is, why does kidney dialysis for the Capital District have to be here in the Halifax Central region?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we have dialysis in all of our DHAs, and we have some satellite programs in some of the DHAs as well. We know that we have areas of the province where we have a growing population of individuals who require dialysis, and that in some of those areas, the distances for which people have to travel to get this life, you know, maintaining service is substantial. And so what we are doing is we are looking at how we can best provide services for people within the envelope of financial resources that we have. We also will be exploring home dialysis, which can be very effective for many people, and it is also a form of dialysis that can improve the quality of life for some people. So there are a variety of options that we're looking at, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member for Hants West on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I have a couple ideas about that myself, and I would ask the Minister, is she prepared to review the expenditure for kidney dialysis in the Capital District Health Authority for the 2011-12 year and look into a satellite operation for the Hants Community Hospital in Windsor?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And as I indicated to the member, we're looking at the need for dialysis services province-wide. And certainly, as we review the need, I would assume that because Windsor is in the province, it will be given some consideration.
The Honourable Member from King's West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this government has decided to take what could have been an important initiative and remove any potential benefits for harm reduction and research into VLT use and addiction. The My Play cards could have been useful. However, the Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage has decided against all the research which is available to offer a My Play and a My Play Lite. My question to the Minister, why did the Minister turn his back on the potential gains for both research and harm potential by building this massive loophole in the overall My Play card system?
The Honourable Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for that question because it brings to light an important issue. I think it's important to recognize the steps we're taking as a government when we release the gaming strategy. We're going to be the first jurisdiction in North America, Mr. Speaker, to implement a card system, a MyPlay system, here in Nova Scotia. I think that's important. There are benefits to the card system, and early studies have indicated that the benefits will be there for those individuals who find themselves at risk for gaming, Mr. Speaker, here in the province. So I think it's something that we should be proud of as a government to ensure that Nova Scotians are being looked after when we talk about gaming and responsible gaming tools. And I think the MyPlay system will just do that, Mr. Speaker. It'll be a responsible gaming tool that all Nova Scotians can take benefit when we implement it next year, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Member from King's West on your first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the Minister needs to pay more due diligence to the Focal Research final report, which was very clear. Mandatory player registration is required for the system to be functionally effective. What the Minister fails to acknowledge is that there are some serious holes in his MyPlay Lite idea. By giving out a card which you don't have to sign up for, and which you can return to the bartender once you've done or toss into garbage, you are unable to undertake any tracking. Additionally, Mr. Speaker, the Minister indicates that these cards will not be used on machines in casinos. That means that the province will still have no reliable data on gambling, and what is worse, this is no longer a tool for any gambler who simply tosses the card away. My question to the Minister, why would the Minister propose such a flawed two-tiered system?
The Honourable Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And that's definitely a difference of opinion, Mr. Speaker. We believe that this system will be at the benefit of Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker. We've seen it across other jurisdictions, and the studies have shown that going to a mandatory MyPlay card system is the right decision to make, Mr. Speaker. And one thing we're doing, we're ensuring when we made this decision, is not only taking into account the well-being of Nova Scotians, but also ensuring that we continue to support industries here in Nova Scotia. The MyPlay system that we're going to implement in Nova Scotia, Mr. Speaker, was developed by a Nova Scotia company. I think that's important to recognize that not only are we taking the health and well-being of Nova Scotians at stake, Mr. Speaker, but we're ensuring that we support a local business here in the province.
The Honourable Member for King's West on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I will table for the Minister the Focal Research, page 101, for maybe a second read. Mr. Speaker, this flawed MyPlay Lite system fails when it comes to gathering baseline information on behaviour. It fails when it comes to the ability for gamblers to set realistic safeguards. And this flawed MyPlay Lite card accomplishes is imposing an additional task on an already busy bartender and an additional resentment from any from an already bitter gambler. It may be good public relations, Mr. Speaker, but it's bad policy, plain and simple. My question to the minister, will the minister reconsider his flawed My Play Light cards and move forward with the single full enrollment card?
The Honourable Minister of Communities, Culture and Heritage.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The benefits for all Nova Scotians will be recognized when this program is implemented next year, Mr. Speaker. One of the things we wanted to ensure that retailers across the province had the time to educate themselves, their staff, but most importantly, Nova Scotians who are going to be required to use a MyPlay card, Mr. Speaker, when it comes to VLTs in Nova Scotia. I believe the information and the tools within the MyPlay system will benefit Nova Scotians. It'll give them the opportunity to ensure that they track their gaming, Mr. Speaker, that they can set limits, Mr. Speaker, and I think it's a great first step for our government. As we know in the past, Mr. Speaker, it's the Liberal government that introduced VLTs in the province, Mr. Speaker. We're bringing forward initiatives like MyPlay system that will benefit Nova Scotians, Mr. Speaker, and we're very proud of that.
The Honourable Member for Argyle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, the Department of Health finally unveiled its tobacco control strategy. And anything with the goal of reducing smoking in Nova Scotia is, of course, a positive step forward. However, I was disappointed to see the document announced is just another expensive piece of literature, like the gaming strategy, the new agricultural strategy, and many other strategies that this government has introduced. Considering this document is just a recycled, updated version of what our government produced in 2001, Mr. Speaker, my question through you to the minister is, why did it take, Mr. Speaker, 2 years to introduce the new tobacco control strategy?
The Honourable Minister of Health and Wellness.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. And I want to first
Order, please. The time allotted for oral questions put by members to minister has expired.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television. The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.